Nobody told me, there's the microphone. Nobody told me which microphone to crank up. Now I got it going. There we go. All right. Life is good again. They made me change the microphone so that I wouldn't have the problem that I had all morning yesterday with poor Dr. Feynman trying to hear me through the microphone. He couldn't hear me. But I think we got things corrected by going to a different microphone. But then I forgot to crank up the right pot. So we're good now. We're good. I'm a little discombobulated, I guess is the word. We have Fred Malone. We have Fred Malone with us. I don't know which mic you're on either. So I'm going to turn them all up, and one of them will.
Okay, how about this
one? Well, that one must be working.
Are we going okay?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, talk into it again one more time.
Yep. Can you hear me?
Well, talk into that one.
There we go. How's this?
I think that's a little better. I'm going to leave them all up. To heck with it.
Yeah.
I'm getting a reading on my level here, so.
Well, yesterday when I called in, it sounded like you and Scott were both in a tunnel someplace.
Yeah.
Way far away.
Huh.
But now when you were just on the radio talking to each other, I could hear you fine.
Yeah, that
but
was the problem.
With the phone, so.
That was, it was strange. Hopefully we've got it corrected.
Do you have a poltergeist that comes around here at night and messes with all the dials?
I wondered why the screen I'm looking at over here went fuzzy.
Yeah. It could very well be, yeah. You've got a very playful poltergeist in the building.
Yeah, now I found out which microphone you are on.
So you can put the rest of them down.
Yeah, I can put the rest of them down. You're on number two, and okay. I'm on number three. Number one is dead. Scott, get in here. You got to fix all this crap.
When is he going to be able to get back in the station? Does he know?
Not sure.
Not sure yet.
He's just trying. I guess he has to stay away from people because of the medicines he's taken and stuff like that.
Right.
So,
right.
I don't know.
Well, I hope he's able to get out by the time June 2nd rolls around because we're looking forward to having you guys down at the museum and. Helping us celebrate the opening of Mary Ellen Withrow's museum on
that
day.
That's terrific. I am so happy for her.
Yeah, well, you know, we're actually going to be celebrating two other museum openings the same day. Nothing is quite as fantastic as what Mary Ellen's is, but I think I mentioned this the last time I was here. We took possession of Sherry Williamson's Woodland Elves Museum collection.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
And so that we'll be doing a ribbon cutting for that also that same day. And also we took over the old telephone museum that was located out on Bell Fountain Avenue.
I got to see those.
It's pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not sure all of it is going to go up because we just simply don't have that much room. And a lot of it is repetitious.
Yeah.
So the ladies at the museum that are responsible for getting all the getting everything set up with all the exhibits, they have gone through and kind of checked out what we had duplicates or triplicates of, so we're only going to have one out.
Yeah.
I think when they had the museum open out on Bell Fountain Avenue, they had everything out, period, whether they had four or five of them or one.
Yeah.
But because of the space we have, we're going to have to cut that down somewhat. But
well, it gets a little redundant if you have the same thing.
Well, it does, but then again, you got to remember that the guys that put that museum together were a bunch of old retired telephone guys, and they like telephone.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there was one board that had like 50 different kinds of wire on it. Now,
really?
Most people aren't going to stand there and look at 50 different kinds of telephone wire.
Yeah, not telephone wire. I might look at 50 different types of wire.
Yeah, barbed wire, maybe. But
barbed wire or big cable wire.
Yeah, cable wire,
something like that.
Yeah, but these were different types of telephone wire. So things like that they've had to go through and kind of sort through and pick out. But the main focus that day is going to be the opening of Mary Ellen's Museum.
Now, what's the admission charge going to be?
There won't be any charge that day. The museum will be open free to the public. Hope to have a couple of special guests there. The activities will start about 4 o'clock and run through, we're not quite sure, maybe 7, maybe not that late. We're planning on, I think at this point we haven't nailed down the itinerary 100% yet, but I think at this point we're going to start out with the Woodland Elves exhibit. Probably going to do that one first at 4 o'clock or a little bit thereafter. And I'm thinking that Mary Ellen's is going to be around 5. That'll give people that are working, you know, possibly a chance to get there if they want to participate in it. So, and then we'll finish up with the Telephone Museum last. So we've got 3 of them to do that day. But we encourage people to come. Mary Ellen will be with us that day, obviously. And I always tell people, if you've got any bills that have Mary Ellen's signature on them when she was treasurer of the United States, bring them along. She's happy to sign those. She loves doing that. So you can get that done that day. And you'll have a chance to talk to her, get pictures taken with her if you like. And as I say, I'm working on a special guest. Hopefully he'll be able to be there that day. And
Santa Claus?
Santa Claus, yeah, right, in the middle of June. So I think the whole day is going to be great. Festivities are going to be great.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to try and be there. I haven't talked to my wife yet, so I don't know.
Well, I think the plan is, Scott, I think, is planning to broadcast the ceremony from there. And so hopefully people that aren't able to get out that day for whatever reason, or they're still working, you know, the afternoon shift, they can turn the radio to 107.1 and listen in.
Yeah.
Because it'll be live. And again, I hope to have a nice crowd there that day. This is a really big deal. Mary Ellen's going to be, I think, 92 this year.
I
think 92. I could be wrong, 91, 92. I'm not quite sure. But she's in great great physical condition. She looks very good. She is very mobile, very with it.
Yeah, she is.
She is sharp as a tack.
She is.
And you know, I just can't wait for people to see the new museum. Very excited for it. It's actually, what we did, we took our old archives office, which was located right across the hall from the Harding Rooms. Now, you've not been in the museum, so you're not familiar with it. But this is on the lower level. And we completely emptied out the old archives office, which gave us a great space for Mary Ellen's items, her museum. And that was all completely redone. The only thing we're waiting on right now, which I think should be in either this week or the very first of next week, is the case for her inaugural dress.
That'll be beautiful,
I
bet.
When she was inaugurated. And we have the dress, obviously. But we wanted it in a airtight, airproof, fingerproof case. So just waiting on that. But the room is great. It can be locked all by itself, so that we can keep that collection separate from the rest of the collection. Even though the whole museum is, of course, you know, wired for security.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Have alarms and all that in it. But we wanted a place where we could keep that exhibit secured behind closed, locked doors.
Now, can people come anytime from 4 o'clock? Whenever it's
Sure. 4 o'clock, between 4 and I'm going to roughly say 7 o'clock. They can stop by and see it.
But the opening.
But the official opening,
yeah.
we're hoping to do hers around 5 o'clock.
Okay.
The Woodland Elves around 4. I think Sherry's planning to be there. Sherry Williams planning to be there. The lady that wrote the books and created these characters. But I think she has some out-of-town people coming in, and they have to be someplace else later, so I think that's why we're going to do hers first.
Okay.
For one reason. And then, again, that will give people a chance to get there to see Mary Ellen's ribbon cutting when that happens. One of the things that I think is fascinating is Mary Ellen gave John Glenn a $20 bill to take into space when he did his record-setting a trip to space when he was still a U.S. senator and 70-some years old, that he went up on the shuttle. And he took that up with him and brought it back, of course, and signed
it. So it has rarefied air.
It has rarefied air. It's been to outer space and back, you know, more than most of us can say.
More than Elon Musk.
Yeah. But she has – oh, yeah, well, man.
Never mind.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy, I don't know about that guy. I'm not quite sure about
That's another show entirely.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, we have to touch base with Dr. Feynman about him.
Yeah, oh, no. don't open
there.
That box, no.
But she has so many interesting things in her collections, so many really great photographs with her, I mean, really famous people. I brought a friend over to see it last week, and he was amazed that she had 2 photographs with Tommy Lasorda.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Of course, Tommy's gone now.
Yeah.
But a lot of pictures, of course, with President Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Al Gore, a lot of world leaders, a lot of other famous politicians, famous people. She just traveled a lot and represented the United States well in that office.
Have you ever wondered how many or how tiring that can be to be, you know, one of the governmental leaders having to shake hands with all those people?
Yeah,
holy cow.
I think she told me one time how many hands she thought she had shaken over the 8 years that she served in that office, and it was phenomenal.
Yeah,
I do know that.
Sure.
And of course, the big thing that occurred when she was U.S. Treasury is the complete overhaul of the look of the money,
right,
of the currency in this country.
And it does look a lot better than it
used to. Yeah, and of course the quarter program started then when she was in office. And so, and before her term was out, we were going into a new millennium.
That's right.
So So I mean, a lot of very interesting things happened during her term of office. And of course, when you stop and think about her being the only person to hold that office in both the county, state, and federal levels, which has never been done before and probably will never happen again.
Yeah,
it's just an amazing fact.
Yeah,
just
it is
an amazing fact.
I really will try to make that one. Is Scott going to come down and open the exhibits?
Well, we're planning on having a broadcast from the opening. Yes, that's
broadcast right from there.
Right from there.
Okay,
yeah.
That'll be
good.
He
told me all he needed was Wi-Fi and a plug-in, so I've got both of those.
And a mask, because he doesn't want to get sick.
And a mask. Yeah, right. He can provide that. Yeah,
I'm sure he can.
But and again, you know, this will give people an opportunity to kind of peruse the museum, see the new exhibit. And, you know, we're kind of specializing in the 30s this year in the atrium of the museum. A lot of things never change. The Popcorn Museum stays the same pretty much all the time. But for those people who have never seen the Popcorn Museum, they need to make sure they go see that.
Did you get a chance to watch the show on, I think it was public television or something, about Popcorn?
No, I missed that.
It was a great show, all about Orville Redenbacher and Mr. Bowman, who was his assistant. Not
right.
Assistant. They were equal partners.
Right.
And a friend of my family. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. A very matter of fact, I dated Judy Bowman, his daughter.
Oh, the daughter.
Yeah. Not very much. Right. We were
and
just
And you didn't
friends.
Go into Popcorn?
No, I didn't. We didn't know how big a thing it was.
Oh, my word.
And then they're talking about this on the show, how in 1962 through 64, they were really struggling to get this taken care of. Well, that was when I was...
When you were dating
this girl. When I knew his daughter, yeah.
I'll be darned. Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, Orville, easy for me to say, was... the parade marshal here at the Popcorn Parade several years ago.
I didn't know Orville was.
I was not here at the time, but somebody told me that he was. He did serve as a parade marshal once.
Well, I got his daughter to come as a favor to me.
Oh, did you?
She went to my dad's church as well, and she came, and she was the grand marshal for, I guess, about 8 years ago.
Yeah,
something
that's
like
cool.
That.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I
well,
got
anyway,
you way
no,
off
no the... problem. But so there'll be a lot of things for you to see besides that. But again, the main event, so to speak, if it were a big event, the main event will be the opening of the Mary Ellen Withrow Museum. So.
Can you tell me a little bit about the little characters that you're – what is the name of their – you're going
to – Oh, the Woodland Elves?
Yeah, the Woodland
Elves. Well, I don't know a whole lot about them myself, but it was Sherry Williamson created these little elves. They look like little elves.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, you know, back in Victorian times, elves were very popular.
Mm-hmm.
Elves and fairies, little flying fairies. And so they were very popular. So she created these characters and wrote some books about these characters in different circumstances. And the museum used to be located at her house. And she had her whole backyard, I guess, kind of like a fairyland set up, from what I understand.
Is she from Marion?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
She's a Marion person. And I don't know whether they had planned to move or sold their house or what, but... just like Mary Ellen, she needed a place to put this collection, this museum collection, because it is very popular. And she would have school kids there to see the exhibit and so forth. So we've, again, created a special room. We took our gift shop, which was way too big for what we sold. We sell primarily books.
Yeah.
We kind of did away with the trinket things and went strictly to books in our gift shop. So we divided our gift shop, put up a wall and divided our gift shop out, which was a pretty good-sized room. And one half of it is our gift shop, where you come in the front door, and then the other side is her Woodland Elves exhibit, and that also has a locking door, so mm-hmm. we can lock that too.
Yeah, those could be easily absconded.
Absolutely, because they're very small, yeah, right? Yeah. So if there's not a docent available when people come, you know, that room could be locked off if need be.
Now, that's a new word. Docent?
Docent, yes. That's like a guide.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to have to tell my wife.
That's what they call people that work in museums, that are guides or are docents.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I'm going to have docents. To write that down so I can tell my wife. My wife and I love to, we watch some television, and we love to write down the words we have no idea. And there are a lot of them lately.
Oh, there's quite a few of them out there, yeah. Well, until I got in the quote-unquote museum business back in 1974...
When you were two or three,
I was the youngest president of the Hocking County Historical Society.
Is that right?
Elected in 1974.
At two or three.
Yeah, I was a couple years old. Okay. I was in diapers, but and that's the first I ever heard the word docent. Hmm. I always thought it was a guide, you know. And I was corrected by our curator at the time. That those people are referred to as docents.
Okay. So,
and we call them docents at Malabar. We call them docents at all the museums I've been affiliated with or are a part of.
Would know, that so. Be a guide at any public place?
Yeah, docent would be if you went up to the art museum up in Cleveland or Toledo. That person would also be a docent. Yeah.
So the next time I go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I'm going to ask the docent if he knows what he is.
And he may not, you know. Yeah. But if you're a museum of any standing, that's what you call yourself.
All right, cool. Yeah.
And I've been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but I don't remember what they called themselves.
Well, know? I don't. I was there, but I was there two or three times, each time with a group. So probably weren't escorted around.
Yeah.
I was there with with the credit union people. I was there with the other. It doesn't make any difference.
Or our senior center. Went there one time. We took in a ball game, a Cleveland Indians game, and then the next day we went to the Hall of Fame.
Now, who are the Cleveland Indians?
That's a team in Cleveland that still plays baseball there.
But they're called the Guardians now.
To some people, they're referred to as the Guardians, not to me.
Okay.
I don't own a piece of their stuff, and I won't have a piece of their stuff. To me, they're Indians, and I'll always wear my Indians stuff.
Gotcha.
I actually bought a shirt down in Columbus a few months ago. It has a huge picture of Chief Wahoo on it because, you know, they also did away with Chief Wahoo.
Right. I knew that.
Big piece of Chief Wahoo on it, and it says, "Wahoo forever until I'm gone."
I like it. Well, you know, I guess I understand why you'd want to do away with Chief Wahoo. He's kind of a duncey-looking guy.
But here's the thing people don't understand, and this is what kind of irritates me. If you look at the history of the Cleveland baseball team, that name came because they were honoring American Indians. They were honoring Native Americans by calling them the Indians.
Much
and
like
it irritates me that people take the wrong impression of that. And personally, my personal feelings is this all happened because the family that owns that team saw an opportunity to make a lot of money on new merchandising and new advertisement that they sacrificed over 100 years of a name for a buck.
Yeah, well, unfortunately.
It's a sore subject for me, which you can understand.
Unfortunately, a lot of people are ignoring facts and figures for the buck.
I've been going to ball games up there in the old municipal stadium since 1954. And in all those years that I've been to a Cleveland ball game, never, never, never did I see any Native American with a sign protesting that name. Mm-hmm. Never. Mm-hmm. Now, one friend of mine who lives in Cleveland has season tickets. He's a retired attorney. He always went on opening day. And he said once in a great while on opening day, there were two people there with signs protesting the name. Two. Mm-hmm. Now, you change a name for two people? I don't think so. Not in this country.
Well, you know, I wondered. I asked another person. And I'm an Indian fan. That's the team I root for in the American League. But I'm really a Cub fan. But
I didn't hear that.
I asked, you should have been around during the World Series. It was hard to root for both teams at the same time.
Yeah, it wasn't hard for me.
But I asked a friend of mine who is an Indian fan. I said, what if they had changed the name to Native Americans? would that have been okay? And it wasn't.
No, probably not. Yeah. Actually, this Guardian thing, I did 100,000 times I've been through those big pillars.
Yeah.
On 71 that takes you downtown.
Right.
You know, I get off on Ontario or whatever street we get off. It's such a routine thing. I don't even remember the name of the street. But I've been through those things a zillion times, and I never looked up there to see what they were. I just not knew they were concrete pillars. That's it. I didn't even know there was a character cut in them. So when they
there
said,
is
oh,
a character cut in?
That's where they got the name Guardians.
I didn't realize there was a character cut in them either.
There's a character cut into them, and that's supposed to be the guardian of the lake.
Oh, okay.
Well, good grief. In all the years I've traveled up there, no one ever told me that. No one ever pointed it out to me.
Nobody
now all
cared.
Of a sudden, yeah, nobody cared. Now all of a sudden, this is the name they settle on to do away with the Indians. We're going to call them the Guardians. Why didn't they go with Spiders? That was the original name of the club.
Is that right?
Or the Naps? That was another one of the original names of the club.
There is a college team,
and the reason they called them the Naps was in honor of an American Indian that played on the team.
Is that right?
And I can't pronounce it, but it was Napoli or something like that. Uh-huh. And they called them the Cleveland Naps. Then they went to the Spiders, and eventually they became the Indians in 1904.
There's a college team, the Richmond Spiders from Richmond, Virginia.
Right.
And I always liked that name.
Well, I would have been okay with the Spiders because it was part of the club history.
Yeah.
But to pick a name out of the air simply because they needed another name, and supposedly they did a survey, but I never got anything. Nobody asked me.
They don't care
about
you.
But to pick a name like that had no connection or no history with the team didn't make any sense to me. If you're going to change the name, at least keep it in line with something that was history for the team.
It doesn't
Spiders or Naps, either one of them would have been all right.
As a former PR person, it didn't even ring well,
I didn't think. No. Yeah, so. And, of course, I've heard people say, well, if you look at Guardians, Ians, Indians,
yeah, it rhymes.
You got a little bit of the name in there. Well, baloney. That doesn't mean anything to me. And what really, really, really irritates me about this whole thing is in the World Series last year, when the Atlanta Braves were playing, were playing, and they were doing their chop and making their hey, hey, hey. Where were the protesters?
I don't know.
Where were the people that were complaining about that?
The same two were out front there.
They didn't change their name. I don't think they got any plans to change their name. So.
Yeah. Well, I remember when Miami changed their name. Miami University.
Right. They went from the Redskins. Red Hawks. What were they? Redskins?
Now they're called the Red Hawks.
Now they're called the Red Hawks.
And they were called the Redskins.
Well, at least that's close enough. I could live with that.
Yeah.
But still, it's the idea.
How
about the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah. Well, the Redskins changed their name, even though the young man who was the dancer in Indian outfit was trained every year by the Miami tribe to do their dance that honored them.
Sure.
So
They weren't complaining.
No.
But there again, that gave the university an opportunity to completely retool and completely sell a whole new bunch of junk.
Well, I'm from OU, so I
could buy. Me too.
I never did. Yeah, I know you are. So
if they ever touch the Bobcats, boy, they got a fight on their hands.
Well, I don't think there are too many Bobcats that are going to complain.
Well, they're moving back into Ohio, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're coming
right
in from Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Well, now, I remember when we changed the paw
to
the paw print.
Right.
We did get some complaints,
but
not very many.
Probably
because
minor, though.
People liked the paw a lot.
Yeah.
And then they moved from the paw to the attack cat.
Yeah.
And they got a lot more complaints about that than moving to the paw. Now, the paw was designed by, and I can't remember Mr. Basudin's first name, but he was a friend. His wife, Martha, is a very good friend of my wife. And he explained to me why it is a bobcat paw. It's designed after a bobcat paw that's been pushed down because bobcats walk
on their tippy toes. Right,
but
right.
If it's pushed down, it forms what
paw,
you see.
Right, yeah.
And now I notice that they're starting to bring the paw back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've bought some T-shirts recently that have the paw on them.
And you have me to thank for that, by the way.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
I was the guy that got it copyrighted.
Well, I have a pair of sweatpants from excuse me, from my freshman year.
Oh, my. And you still wear them?
I can still get in them, believe
That's
it or not.
That's wonderful, yeah.
Yeah, they were, but they were solid green, and they just had bobcats down the side, no paws.
I can't even get into my white tighties I wore when I was a freshman in college.
Well, I wouldn't want to wear them out in public.
Okay. What are we going to be talking about today?
Well,
now that we've
had our griping session here about the whole thing with the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah.
By the way, the Indians blew a great opportunity night before last to win that game for the Reds.
I'm sorry. I didn't watch it.
Well,
I'm struggling to watch my Cubs.
We tied it up with a home run in the ninth inning, and we failed. Well, we walked a run in. The pitcher walked a run in, and then we failed to come back. Let's see, that was in the eighth inning. We failed to come back in the ninth inning with a couple of chances, bases loaded.
Ouch, that hurts.
And with no outs, bases loaded, we couldn't get a guy in.
You couldn't even pop a fly to the right field.
No. And the bases were loaded because the pitcher for the Reds walked a couple guys.
That's a horrible. Well, now, since you're bragging about your, not bragging, but you're talking about your Indians, I got to talk about my grandson and my granddaughter. Now, you know my grandson's going to be pitching for North Carolina.
Right.
Not next year. Yeah, next year.
Right.
But my granddaughter, who is only a sophomore, was selected to play softball on the varsity team.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and they both got into the state championship in North Carolina. And yesterday, they were both down in the final inning, and both teams won.
Oh, for
so
well, that's
they're
great.
Continuing on.
Yeah.
If they both win the next game, they will be in the Final Four in North Carolina.
Wow, well, that's great.
It'll be kind
well,
of fun.
Well, sure. Are you planning on going down?
Nah, that's a long. That's 535 miles down to their house.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pass on that.
Yeah. Well, maybe somebody can videotape it for
us. Yeah, I'm sure my daughter will videotape for us. Yeah. Okay.
Well,
We've knocked everything out of the park.
Yeah. Well, I will add one more thing. My son, when he was playing ball, he did get drafted by the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, you told me that. That's fantastic.
But unfortunately, got hurt in spring training and career ending.
You can't count on your hands the number of guys that can say that every year.
Yeah, sad. It really is sad.
Yeah.
Sad. Okay.
All right.
Well, I think we've talked a little bit about different aspects. We've talked about who was born in the White House. We talked about who died in the White House. I think we talked about pets in the White House.
Still my favorite is Fala.
Yeah.
Roosevelt's dog.
Yeah. Although that pony that Caroline Kennedy had, Macaroni.
Yeah, that was kind of
That was
neat.
Always kind of cute. Yeah. You know, she had that pony Macaroni. But just a kind of a tie-in before we start talking directly about the residents of the White House. A few weeks ago, PBS had a special on Ben Franklin. Did you happen to see that?
I missed it.
It was a two-part special. I'm not sure if I think it was a Ken Burns thing, but I don't remember for sure if he was the one that put it together. But it was very good. It was a total 4 hours, 2 hours both nights. And the thing I think people don't completely know who and what Ben Franklin was. I think we know a little bit about Ben Franklin. Most people know a little bit about Ben Franklin, but he was a different individual all around. The things that people don't really realize about him too much, and they brought it out in this special, was, you know, he was quite the womanizer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't a handsome man.
No, but his sexual prowess evidently was well known, not just here, but abroad as well, because, you know, he served.
Bad choice of words there.
Well,
Jeff.
Yeah.
Or Jeff.
He did serve as an ambassador in the court in France, I think, and also England.
Oh, in France, then that's okay.
Well, yeah, well, with the French, you know. But the special brought a lot of that stuff out. And, you know, it was because of him that certain things appear in, for instance, the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. He made some changes to Jefferson's Declaration of Independence that were quite critical changes. So
Are you going to tell us which
ones?
No,
I want you to watch a special. Okay. Because, you know, it'll be back on again.
Yeah.
It'll be back on again. And, you know, one of the things that we like to do at the Marion County Historical Society through our reenactments, through our dinners with the presidents and our lunches with first ladies.
Which
and
I've
that
been advertising for you, by the
Thank
way.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And I've heard that. But one of the things that I think, especially today, people will learn more if they can see it and hear it rather than read it.
Makes it very personal.
Because there aren't, let's face it, there aren't as many readers today as there were 100 years ago or even 50 years ago. With all the different media that we have at our...
become lazy.
We truly have.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's easier to flip the television on and get all your news rather than to read a newspaper. That's why so many newspapers have gone bankrupt. Or they put all their papers online.
Yeah.
And I'm still upset with the Columbus Dispatch, and that's another story.
Okay.
But I think that's important. And if you're going to watch television, watch something that you could be educated about. You know, and here I am saying this, and my wife loves all those, what do you call them, those... stories that are connected to real life.
Reality
TV.
Oh,
she likes all
things.
That stuff, and I can't stand it. But PBS, and PBS doesn't get enough credit as far as I'm concerned.
Amen.
But PBS has wonderful programming, and it's programming that's suitable for the entire family. You don't have to worry about what the rating is or any of that kind of stuff. But most of it's suitable for the entire family, and you're going to get a history lesson in most cases. And Ken Burns, who's been doing his specials for now, I think, over 35 years, he just does an excellent job with his specials.
And he doesn't make you work at it.
He doesn't, no. Yeah. And they flow, and he gets very good famous actors to be the voices of historical people.
Yeah.
And the choices that he makes are excellent.
And he digs deep.
He does dig deep. Yeah. He really does dig deep. Yeah. So, but anyway, moving on real quick. Quick real thing. The men's luncheon is a week from tomorrow.
Yep.
No more ticket sales on that.
Yeah,
so
we
had to turn our menu in for
had
that.
Had to quit on the 12th.
Yep. But the ladies' luncheon, that's going to be August. You have your sheet handy.
Yeah,
right?
August.
I've got one somewhere.
16th or something like
It's on a Saturday. And that's what we're going to do next year with the men's luncheon. We didn't get as good a crowd this year because it's on a Thursday. And I think don't get bus trips very much anymore, we're going to go to a Saturday next year with the men's luncheon. But the ladies' luncheon is coming up. It's on August, is it the 4th maybe?
It's on August the 6th.
The 6th, August the 6th.
And you've got to have your reservations in by July 15th.
Okay, and tickets are selling quickly
good.
On that one.
Oh, well, there are some very good...
we've got some good speakers this year.
Yeah, you do.
Some good first ladies this year. But the point I wanted to make is, not just on that luncheon, which is coming up in August, but the first Saturday in November is our dinner with the presidents, and that is selling out quick.
Good.
I think all the presidents' tables have been sold.
Really? I got a home.
There might be a few tickets left for Teddy Roosevelt simply because an opportunity opened up at another table, and the family that had the whole table wanted the other table. So we've got some. I think we got a few Teddy Roosevelt tickets left.
I'd like to be there.
But you got your own table.
Yeah.
But I think everything else is sold. So general seating is what's available yet, unless there might be one or two random seats with a president. But they are selling quickly. And again, we usually cut that off at around 300 people. If you're interested in that, I wouldn't hesitate. I'd get in there and buy tickets now for both of those events that are coming up.
When do you cut that off?
About a week before.
A week
before? Yeah, about a week before. Okay. Week, 10 days
before. Oh, and the food is fantastic.
The food is absolutely great. Yep. Again, for those people that don't know, all the food is taken, the original White House recipes, and we feature foods that the speaking presidents ate while they were in the White House. So this year, I think we've got Lyndon Johnson. I think we got James Monroe, Teddy Roosevelt.
And our own president, Harding.
Is he speaking this year?
I couldn't
remember
the speakers,
and, of course, Mary Ellen will speak, too. So
excellent.
But
Now, I found a book, by the way, online about my character, so I'm in good shape.
Oh, did you? So you're in good shape.
Yeah,
okay, great. Great. Well, again, I have some information, and it probably is duplicated in what you've got. But
I've only gotten about two chapters done. As you know, I'm not much of a reader. Yeah. I have a little dyslexia, and it causes me to fall asleep. So my wife will find me with my computer on, but I'm out.
But you've drifted away.
Yeah.
Well, again, he was a very interesting individual, the only bachelor president we've ever had that stayed a bachelor. We had a couple of presidents that served after their wives had died.
Yeah.
One that got married in the White House, Grover Cleveland. But the only bachelor president, James Buchanan, yeah.
Well, now, in all the stuff that I'm reading about James Buchanan, nobody really knows.
No, they don't.
About his love life.
Sexual orientation.
Yeah, and his love life. He was
engaged once, right? Yeah. Right, he was engaged once.
They don't know whether that was a real engagement, a for-show engagement. No. They don't know any.
Don't know.
And then she died.
Right. Yeah,
oh,
right.
My
yeah.
goodness.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, back to the White House.
Sure.
Best little stories from the White House.
We got 10 minutes.
A book that I found last year, I think, by a guy by the name of Brian Kelly. There's more than 100 true stories in this book. I've been through the book several times. I've made notes about things I want to talk about.
Sure.
We'll probably only get through about part of it today. At least that's where my notes end. I can always refer to the book. But the fascinating thing about this book is that these are stories that – and I like to classify myself as an amateur historian. I minored in history. But things I never heard of for the most part. Now, some of the information about pets and kids, you know, children of the president and so forth, you know, you do hear more about that.
Yeah.
But some of the more little-known facts and some of the interesting stories that I've dug up in this book, I never heard of before. So I think people will find it interesting. At least I have.
Yeah, and it is real history.
It's it is. Not, oh, absolutely.
It's fake.
No, not at all.
And so, a lot of the stuff that you see reenacted on TV is adjusted.
Well, they use, if you were writing a book, it would be called poetic license.
There you go. That's the word.
And if it's out in Hollywood, it's, I don't know
BS.
What they call it. Yeah, a lot of it's just, well, they enhance it to make the story more interesting.
Right.
Yeah. Now, one of my favorite authors who is writes historic fiction, and the only reason they call it historic fiction is because the fiction part of it is some of the dialogue, but all of the history in the books is very historical. I mean, everything is accurate. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Alan Eckert.
Okay.
Alan Eckert was a resident of Ohio for a number of years, lived in Belle Fountain. He wrote a lot about the early frontier, about the Northwest Territory, about people like Tecumseh and Blue Jacket, Simon Girty, Simon Kenton, people like that.
I've sat in the same place with Tecumseh.
Oh, is that right?
I sat on the hill that he actually committed suicide.
Oh, really?
From. Yeah.
Wow, interesting.
Right where he sat.
Right where he sat.
Yeah.
But anyway, and there's some other really good authors out there now that write historic fiction. And I will read. That's the only kind of fiction I'll read. I'll read that because everything is based in historical facts, and the only thing that's fiction is some of the dialogue that they have. Because, hey, if you're out in the middle of the woods fighting with an Indian,
you don't have a recorder
going. You don't have a recorder going to tell you what each person is saying. So there was dialogue made up for that. But that just keeps the story flowing. But
we'll give them license.
Yeah, yeah. But again, history is fascinating. Several people have said, and I don't know who the original quote came from, but we can't know where we're going if we don't know where we've been.
Yeah.
And, you know, for recorded history to go back as far as it does go, we're really fortunate that we have that recorded history and fortunate that someone took the time to write these things down, because if it hadn't been for that, you know, we wouldn't have it. You know, look at U.S. Grant. On his deathbed, so to speak, wrote his memoirs, two huge volumes of memoirs from his whole life while he was suffering and dying from throat cancer.
I didn't realize it was on his deathbed.
On his deathbed. He literally wrote the last sentence to his second volume of his memoirs on the day that he died.
Oh, wow.
On the day that he died. And, of course, he did it for not just for posterity. He did it for one reason.
He wanted
the money.
Oh, really?
He needed the money.
Well, and he had a pretty bad reputation at times. Maybe he was trying to correct some
of
those things.
Well, That could be part of his reason, but the main reason for sitting down and doing
cash.
These memoirs was for cash. Yeah. And the sad part of it was he was never a rich man. You know, he lost his commission before the Civil War. He was decommissioned and had to go back and get his commission again, or he would have even served in the Civil War and would have been the commander of the Union forces. But he never made any big money. You know, he was a failure in business early on. That's why he went into the military, because he couldn't cut it in business. His dad was a tanner, wanted him to take over the tanning business. Couldn't
do
that.
Sound like a big money maker.
Well, back in those days, it was
some.
Yeah, it was a comfortable living.
Yeah, like being a plumber now.
He tried farming. He tried store clerking. He didn't really want to go to West Point. His dad forced him into going to West Point simply because he needed to get him an education. out of the house, yeah. But he never really made any money. And after he left the White House, he did have a little money from his years in the White House, but he invested it in his son's business on Wall Street. His son was a stockbroker on Wall Street and lost it all.
That's a bad deal.
And lost it all in the Depression of 1878. Lost all of his money. So he wrote it so that his family would be able to continue to live after his death. Huh. But he literally wrote the last sentence of his second volume of his memoirs on the day that he died. And if it hadn't been for Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain, he was the one that encouraged him to do it, and he was the one that got it published for him.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, he was the one that got it published. And as a result of that, there was enough money made from the sale of those memoirs that the family was able to live comfortably. His wife was able to live. And
last night, I've told you, I think, that I've written my memoirs. I haven't published them because...
Too racy,
and who'd want to read it? But I was sitting there going, you know, I didn't say a word about my mother's or my father's passing.
Really?
And I started thinking,
rethinking,
why did I not do that?
Yeah.
And the more I think, it was just too uncomfortable for me to bring back.
Probably so. Yeah, probably so.
Anyway,
but Grant. I've read the memoirs. There, a lot of it's very dry, mm-hmm. simply because he goes, as any true general, soldier, he goes through the battles of the Civil War with a fine-tooth comb.
Oh, yeah, that could get a little dry.
And it does. Yeah. It does get a little dry. So, you know, a lot of the time is taken up for those war periods. That's why I had two volumes. You know, because of all the time he spent with the war. And, of course, he fought in the Mexican War, too.
Uh-huh.
So, now, not as a general. I think he was a second lieutenant? What do you get when you come out of West Point? Second lieutenant?
Yeah. Either second or first lieutenant.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so not as much there. But I just think it's fascinating to know that someone would start on those memoirs knowing that you were dying with throat cancer. Mm. And would work on them clear up until the day of your death. So,
well,
fascinating.
I wrote my memoirs because I didn't think I was going to die, but it happened when I had my heart attack.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
It kind of made
sure.
me say,
kind of gives you a jolt.
Yeah, I want to give my kids. I want my kids to know what I did, that
right.
I wasn't just an old man all the time.
Right. Yeah. Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Anyway. Well, we're down to 2 minutes.
Okay.
So.
Well, we touched on Washington last time. Of course, Washington never lived in the executive mansion, because he was sworn in New York, and the Capitol was moved to Philadelphia.
Right.
So he never spent his time in the White House, so to speak, or the Executive Mansion. John Adams was the first president to actually live in the Executive Mansion, which is what they called it originally, was in the Executive Mansion.
Sure.
And he only lived there a short period of time because he only served one term, and the construction didn't start until after he had won the presidency. And, of course, that was cut out of a forest. There was absolutely nothing there when they started, so they had to clear all the trees to build that big structure, and it was a swamp.
Yeah, it
so
was
it was
a swamp.
Pretty miserable. Yeah. They had no conveniences whatsoever. They had, of course, an outhouse. at that time, the White House was just basically four big rooms, so there was no actual heat in there, but a couple of fireplaces. So it was sooty. It was dark. It was dingy. It was dirty. Mrs. Adams had to string rope in what I think is now the green room or the blue room, one of those big rooms downstairs, and that's where she dried her clothes. So it was pretty primitive in those days. So when we come back, we'll start with Jefferson because he was the first president to really live in what we call the executive mansion.
Okay, we're down to our final 15 seconds, so we'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll move on into the White House, all right? Thanks for listening. Make sure you come back because we've got Fred Malone here, all right? Bye-bye.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LP, Marion, Ohio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place. From legendary talk show host, actor, broadcaster, and comedian Charles Grodin.
You know what? You know what? What I'm impressed by. You think I would know this? How you have all this audio?
Oh, you're impressed by this?
Well, what do you do? Just tape it, tape the shows as they go. But you're going back 10 years now, or maybe longer in certain cases.
Charles, when you were on, I made sure to tape it.
Wow, isn't that something? Where are you from originally?
I'm right here in Ohio.
Where? No, I mean, you weren't born where you're working now, or were you?
Do you work for the Internal Revenue Service or something?
I refuse to answer on the grounds.
Yes, I was born right here, Charles. I never went anywhere.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And you like it?
Sure.
Yeah, I liked it, too. So how long have you had this show?
This show?
Yeah.
This particular incarnation of this show has been on about a year, but doing these type of shows about 10 years.
And
is that